It is time. We should get underway. Grab a seat and we'll get underway. Okay, so welcome. I'm Professor Moore, and it's nice to see so many of you signed up for this course this year. Recognize a lot of faces, but I also know we've got new master's students, and especially master's students in speech and language processing, and we've also got some new PhD students in speech and language processing. So it's great to see a large crowd. I'll tell you a bit about the course in a moment, but let me just welcome you from the point of view of some technology.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to COMP3502, COMP4502, and COMP6502. The course on speech processing at the University of Sheffield. Let me introduce myself. I'm a state-of-the-art talking computer, Michele Loquendo in Italy. Over the next 10 weeks, you'll learn something about how I work. I hope you enjoy it. Well, cheerio.
I particularly like that kind of slightly weird laugh at the end. But it just shows you the kind of thing that's possible these days, and I'm sure a lot of you now are very familiar with this technology because it's become part of our everyday lives, and I'll be talking about that a bit more in a moment. But it's not too many years ago when this was a very exotic technology, something which hardly anybody knew about. But what you're going to hear about in the next few weeks is how this technology functions, and more importantly, something about this amazing facility which we use every day. That's the human voice. How it is that we communicate with other members of our species by just making noises out of holes in our head. And we're going to learn about how that works, and then get on to talking about how we might exploit that from a technological perspective. So this is how the course is broken down. It's essentially in two halves. Pretty much the first 10 lectures covers everything to do with speech, how this system functions. You're going to be learning some of the techniques that are used to analyze the signal from a descriptive point of view, learning a little bit about phonetics, which is the science of understanding speech and language signals, and some more exotic things like prosody, which I won't explain right now, but we'll get to at the end of that first half. Then the second half, we're going to dive into something much more technical, much more concerned with signal processing, and in particular the kinds of algorithms, because most people here are computer scientists, so the sort of algorithms that are used to derive interesting things from speech signals. Now, what I'm not going to be talking about in this in these lectures is sort of how to build a speech recognizer, because there's a whole other course, speech technology. Many of you have signed up for that in the second semester. So what I'm going to be doing is giving you the basics, which will allow you to understand and appreciate some important things about a human activity which is exploited in technology. We do have some labs, so by the way, thank you for not being completely confused by us starting in week two. I'm glad you all figured that out. And the labs, because of my trip to Japan, the labs are starting next week, and that's when you'll start to get to grips with some programming, and you're going to be doing that in a rather weird language, which probably, has anybody ever heard of this language, PD, Pure Data? One, two... Okay, so it's a very different language, but the reason that we're using it in this course is because it's a language for creating programs which will process audio in real time. And that's really rather important, because we could easily hack some code to do some offline processing of speech, but one of the essential features of speech and spoken language is that it's a real-time, dynamic, interactive activity. So I'm using this language because it provides a way for me to explain some of the principles in real time. In fact, I'm going to be showing you some demos in a minute. And you can get to use this language in your assignments. And there's one main assignment after the introductory one. The introductory assignment is basically to get you up and running with this language. And then the main assignment is kind of some fun stuff to do with processing speech in real time. So those who haven't heard of Pure Data, it's actually a free version of something called Max MSP. you may have heard of that, but MaxMSP is the sort of has an expensive license, and that's the software you would find in just about every music studio. So this is a language which is very much geared to real-time audio and especially music and music synthesis. So if that's of interest to you, then the skills you're going to pick up in this course will be quite useful, quite outside of speech. And MaxMSP, as I say, is if you're into programming speech music synthesis, then that would be what you would find in a professional music studio. Okay. So let's go straight into a quick demo then of the sort of things that PD can do. So just to say what you're looking at here, PD consists of a bunch of patches. Each patch contains objects. The objects are processes, and the wires you can see sort of connecting things are basically either carrying messages or audio. I'm not going to give you a tutorial on PD just now, but you'll do that in the lab next week. But just so that you can see the kind of thing that's going on there. So this is what I'm about to do. I'll be doing a lot in these lectures, which is having to exit PowerPoint and then screw up my eyes because of the projection that I've got a tiny, tiny screen here. And running up a PD program, there it is. That's quite tiny for me. It's quite tiny for you as well. I'm going to switch on the audio, which just involves moving that slider, and it's going to generate some sounds. Now, everything you're just hearing is not, I'm not playing recordings, everything you're about to hear is being generated from first principles. Okay? So there are functions in here, algorithms behind it, generating sounds from first principles. So we've all arrived here, we've all transported here. That's a familiar sound to you, I'm sure, if you're into science fiction. And, of course, if we're playing something from Star Trek, we better play something from Star Wars. Okay. So all these sounds are being generated from first principles in real time. So you, in a few weeks, you'll be able to do this. And I think this is a particularly fun one, especially as I'm on a plane first thing tomorrow morning. Here we go. Let's switch on a jet engine. Moving on the runway. Getting ready for takeoff. There we go. So that's just to give you a feel for the kind of thing that Pure Data is capable of doing, generating quite complex sounds. And, of course, the one we're really interested in is the one that's coming out of my mouth right now. Okay. Let's get back to the slides. Good. All right, so there are a few, couple of textbooks associated with this course if you want to read up some background, which I strongly recommend. Remember I said the course is essentially in two parts, so the more phonetic science stuff. There's a very nice textbook by Ashby and Maidment, which covers some of the points, some of the topics I'll be dealing with. Then there's a very nice introduction to speech recognition and synthesis by Holmes and Holmes. And if you're very into Pure Data and all this kind of real-time audio synthesis, there's an excellent book called Designing Sound by Andy Fennell. Which I can recommend. Now, just as a piece of information, there's actually an extract from the introduction of the Designing Sound book, which Andy's let me have, and it's on our web. It's on the on MOL, so you can actually download that, which is a very good primer for the language. Okay, so some logistics. This you all know. We've got two lectures a week. What I will do is I try to stick to the timing, so I'll aim to finish at 10:02 or 5:02. We'll have a short break and then carry on. There are practical sessions. The introduction to PD, you've got 3 weeks of that, and that's assessed by a very simple MOL quiz at the end. And it's really important that you do that. It's not complicated, but you need to get up to speed with this new language, right? It's a bit weird if you're not used to this kind of a way of programming. Then after that, there will be the main assignment will be released, and we'll have drop-in sessions. So the lab demonstrators will be available at the times here, and you can just go along and get advice. And obviously, they're not going to explain how to do your assignment, but they will help you get your head around some of the problems you have to solve in doing that. Okay, we've also, yes, the other part of the assessment, of course, is we've got some mole quizzes. So we're using mole quizzes to test the content of the course. They are open book, by which I mean that you're allowed to have your lecture notes, you're allowed to access the slides on mole, because I'm mainly interested in testing your understanding, not your memory. Okay, so that's the way we're running that, and there are two of those. And you can see that that adds up to a reasonable mark. They're not too difficult, but there are a lot of questions covering all aspects of the course. Feedback, we will be doing stuff within the lectures where we can talk about things. There are the practical sessions, of course, and the assignments. But if you desperately need to see me, well, first of all, try the demonstrators. But if you desperately need to see me, I'm in room 142. And as many of you have already discovered, I've got an electronic booking system, so you don't need to necessarily send an email. You can just go to that link and click and book a slot and just turn up. That's fine. And then finally, these lecture notes, ideally they should be on before the lecture. I haven't managed it today, but they will be there immediately after the lecture as PDFs. And you may have also noticed, as well as we've got the Encore capture system going, but I don't know what your experience is, but mine is that it sometimes doesn't work. So I actually do MP3 recordings of my lectures anyway, and they will be all on mole. Okay. Right, enough logistics. Let's get to the topic. So what's speech? What's speech processing? Well, this is the Wikipedia definition of speech processing: the study of speech signals and the processing methods of those signals, and it's a special case of digital signal processing applied to speech signals, which is why in the second half we're going to be doing a lot of digital signal processing, introducing you to a bunch of techniques and algorithms and methods that are used to process not just speech signals, but maybe video, all kinds of signals, also some very specialized algorithms which have been optimized to deal with speech. Okay, so that's what it is. What's it for? Well, we'll see. It's for quite a lot of applications, but here's one really important one. So back in 1876, there were two devices which used speech processing. Anybody have any idea what I'm talking about here? There are only two. Okay. It's Alexander Graham Bell was working on... Actually, he was working on a device to try to help deaf people. But what he came up with was something which has actually completely transformed our world. He came up with a means for processing speech, turning it from an acoustic signal into an electrical signal, transmitting that electrical signal over a wire, now, of course, wirelessly over huge distances, maybe even up to the space station or to the other side of the planet, because now, in, that should say, 2019, there are more of these speech processors than there are people on the planet. And the invention of the telephone was just a huge, huge step forward in human society. And without an understanding of speech and how to process it, that would not have been possible. Okay, so let's look at the different technologies. The telephone is something we would refer to as a speech coding or a device, or a coding encoding device. And of course, these days it's digital. Any coding would be digital. So digital speech coding, there's a whole set of algorithms which are used for communications, some of which we'll be looking at in the second half of the course. So what's on your phone is very different from Bell's, twisted wires. There's some pretty sophisticated algorithms on your phone for creating communications. The sort of things that's in Skype, those kinds of communication media, we'll be discussing those algorithms later on. So that's digital speech coding. In other words, allowing one person to talk to another at a distance. That's what it provides. And that distance could be enormous. The sort of... what would I call it? The kind of the premier technology, which a lot of people get very excited about, is automatic speech recognition. So that's the ability to recognize what somebody is saying using some algorithms. So taking a speech signal and figuring out what somebody is trying to do and then do it. This is obviously now a fantastic new technology which is entering in people's homes, and we'll see that in just a moment. So basically, why is anybody interested in automatic speech recognition? Well, it's another way of communicating with technology. And the usual way, of course, is to use a keyboard and typing. But if you don't have access to a keyboard, maybe you're in a vehicle, or you can't type, or you don't want to type, then you can use your voice. So the automatic speech recognition is replacing a manual data entry technique with a vocal data entry technique. So that's talking to a computer, if you like. And the opposite technology to that is having the computer talk back. This is known as speech synthesis, or more usually TTS, text-to-speech synthesis, where information in a digital device, a machine, a computer, which might exist in textual form, is converted into a speech signal and is spoken back. And why is anybody interested in that? Because the normal way of getting information from a computer is you read a screen. But what if you don't have a screen? Or what if you're blind? You can't see a screen. So it's an alternative way of getting information, which might be in some digital form, back to a human being. Speech synthesis. Now, if we can talk to a computer, and the computer can talk back, then clearly we can create some kind of conversation. So this is what's known as a spoken language dialogue system, where we're basically using both technologies, plus a few other things, of course, because we need to understand what the person's trying to do, and we also need to formulate a response. So there's some sort of AI or intelligence sitting behind all that. And with these two technologies, we can then create an SLDS, Spoken Language Dialogue System. Now, there's all kinds of other things we can do as well. Very, very long list, in fact. But here are a few things. As well as recognizing what people say, we could also figure out, for example, what gender they are. You all know that you can recognize a male voice and a female voice, more or less. You also perhaps realize that you can recognize your friend or a relative. Slightly harder over the telephone for reasons which we'll come to later on. But it's possible to figure out who is speaking from their voice. You don't necessarily want to know what they're saying, but you can figure out who they are. That's known as speaker recognition or speaker identification. Likewise, we can perhaps figure out what language is being spoken by having an automatic device, listen to some speech, and figure out, that's Mandarin, or, that's German. Why would that be of any interest? Well, maybe you could envisage some sort of useful information kiosk in a tourist spot, and tourists walk up to it, and they just speak in their normal language, and the system recognizes what the language is, and a spoken language dialogue system will enter into a conversation using their native language. All kinds of possibilities. And we have seen in recent years dramatic improvements in the quality and the accuracy of all these technologies. And most of that is, of course, come from deep learning, very sophisticated machine learning techniques, which I'm not covering in this course, but you're covering on other courses. But those have had a huge impact. And speech processing labs, like we have here at Sheffield, have always been using the latest machine learning. In fact, speech labs usually drive machine learning by pushing the boundaries of what machine learning is able to do. Because dealing with speech and the technologies I've described are very, very challenging. So Microsoft, a couple of years ago, claiming that they had got a automatic speech recognition system which could recognize speech at a higher accuracy than a human being could. Okay? So typically we talk about error rates, how many words you get wrong. So 5% is about as good as you and me in recognizing arbitrary speech, which is pretty astounding. In fact, over the last few years, we've kind of had word error rate battles going on between the big companies where, people are saying, you might have got 5%, but Google's got 4.9. And these figures are coming from enormous databases, enormous corpora. So even though it looks like a tiny fraction of a percent difference, we do know it's statistically significant because the size of the experiments that these guys are running are enormous. Generating speech, so that's about recognition, but generating speech, which is now almost indistinguishable from the real thing. And I'm going to play you the example now from DeepMind. And if I remember rightly, you're going to hear two examples of speech. One is synthesized and one is real. So the challenge to you is, which is which?
George Washington was the first president of the United States. George Washington was the first president of the United States. I'm too busy for romance. I'm too busy for romance.
Any thoughts on which is real and which is synthetic? I've almost forgotten. I suspect the second one might be real, but it's pretty close call, right? Only a few years ago, that would have been very, very obvious, the difference between synthetic speech and real speech. But thanks to all this work on deep learning, we've reached this point where voices are virtually indistinguishable. I don't know whether you saw this a couple of years ago, or was it last year, when Google got into a little bit of trouble, actually, because there's all kinds of ethical implications are now popping up. When they had an automatic system phone up to make appointments, in this case it's with a hairdresser, and the system was entirely automatic. And so the ethical issues about should they be allowed to do that, of course. So if you haven't heard this, I'll play you the example. You're going to hear two voices. So the person who's booking, the voice that is booking an appointment is not a person, it's the machine. And the person taking the booking, the person in the shop, is a real person. So when you listen to the synthetic person, just listen, not only listen to the voice, but listen to some quite subtle things that are going on, like the voice says, uh-huh, stuff like that, at appropriate moments. So it sounds very realistic. Here we go.
Hello, Hassan Al here. Hi, I'm calling to book a woman's haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd. Sure, give me one second.
That's the person.
Mm-hmm. Sure, what time are you looking for, Ralph?
At 12 p.m.
We do not have a 12 p.m. available. The closest we have to that is a 1:15.
Do you have anything between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.?
Depending on what service she would like, what service is she looking for?
Just a woman's haircut for now.
Okay, we have it at 10 o'clock.
10 a.m. is fine.
Okay, what's her first name?
The first name is Lisa.
Okay, perfect. So I will see Lisa at 10 o'clock on May 3rd.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Great. Have a great day. Bye.
So that's pretty astounding, but what I'm kind of hoping that you're all thinking is, what's behind that? How did that work? What algorithms? It's not just speech recognition and the speech synthesis. Remember, I talked about the dialogue system and understanding and figuring out how to respond. Just imagine the amount of programming that's behind generating that pretty realistic exchange between a real person and a machine. So this is where we are quite right now. Pretty impressive stuff. And that, of course, has led to dramatic appearances in the marketplace of equipment. How many people here have Google Home or Amazon Echo? Ooh, very few. That's remarkable. One or two. Okay, I was expecting a bit more because the market penetration of these devices is absolutely huge. I think I've got some figures coming up. There we go. Tens of millions of Alexa devices sold in 2017. Christmas, right? Google Assistant available on 1,500 devices. Siri has 41 million monthly active users. These are phenomenal numbers. And one of the, just as an aside, one of the consequences of these things hitting the market with all this usage is that all that data that associated with usage is being reused to train the systems and make them even better. And again, we've hit an ethical minefield, so you might be aware that there are people out there saying, hold on, I don't want my data, my exchange with Google Home to be going off into some place that I don't understand and use to make these systems work better. But that's the reality of what's going on right now. So Gartner, who are, make market predictions, are saying things like this, right? Chatbots are going to power 85% of all customer service interactions by 2020. That's next year. That's not very far away. 85%. But they also say, and the average person will have more conversation with bots than with their spouse. So, we'll see what transpires there. Okay, so why do we want to use speech processing at all? I already hinted at some of the reasons why we might use speech recognition, speech synthesis, and dialogue. There are actually huge numbers of applications, and still, a lot of the ideas of where we might use this stuff are sitting in science fiction. And there's a lovely clip here from Star Trek, I want to say. You may have seen this before, where Scotty is trying to access his system, but it's an old one, and he mistakes the mouse for a microphone.
Please. Computer? Computer? Ah. Hello, computer.
Just use the keyboard.
Keyboard. Oh, great.
So, this is a very common thing that you see and I hear being in this business. It's natural, right? It's a natural way of interacting with a computer. Well, I don't know about you, but I do not talk to my computer, right? I hammer the keys. And we have to be very, very careful about statements like this. We're basically making very strong claims on a sort of human factors front, which are completely unjustified. So that's basically painting it black and white. That's essentially wrong. However, using your voice is, of course, intuitive, because we've all grown up to speak to other people and we have a huge skill in that. So maybe that skill can be exploited. But I think we have to be very wary of this "it's natural" statement. It's not natural at all. Not yet. Maybe one day, but not now. And there may be alternatives, perfectly viable other ways of doing things. We mustn't get overexcited by the possibility of using speech recognition or speech synthesis. But there are some pretty horrible alternatives out there. So there are places where you can use your voice. I mean, most of you are probably too young to remember this, but we used to have those nightmare phone systems where you would go through endless menus and options and you couldn't remember the first thing you'd said. And being able to express in a simple sentence what you're trying to do ought to be better than something like that, right? Okay, so what are the real advantages? Why might we be interested in using speech in the sort of human-computer interface? Well, I've already hinted at this. It allows you to do things hands-free. So if you're driving, it's a brilliant way of interacting with your onboard computer or with your sat-nav or something. Rather than, it's rather dangerous, putting your hands over and trying to adjust the controls. If you can just speak to the sat-nav, much safer. Okay? And likewise, it's eyes-free in the sense that if information is coming back through the voice, then it's going into your ears, so you don't need to be looking at a screen. So again, in a driving situation, rather than staring at the sat-nav, it can just, as they all do, give you voice-based instructions. But there are a couple of other advantages which may be less obvious. And one is that it's incredibly fast. Now, what I mean here is that it's a very high information rate channel in and out of a human being. So when you're manually doing something, you're essentially a very low bit rate of communications. But when you're using your voice or listening, it's an incredibly high information rate. Not only that, but you can speak at different rates, and some people can speak very fast. And, believe it or not, there is a world record for speaking. Anybody want to hazard a guess at how many words a minute the world record for speaking is? Let me just give you some numbers. I'm talking now at probably about 150 to 200 words a minute. A newsreader might be going slightly faster. So the world record. Any ideas?
1,000.
1,000. Okay, that's a good number, but it's a little over. But There is a world record holder. This is Fran Capo. 603 words a minute. Now, this is a genuine world record. It's a Guinness World Record. And you can't just gabble. The way it works is that you speak, you have to articulate clearly, and the judges slow it down in order to check that you actually said what they think you're saying, right? So do you want to hear 603 words per minute speech? Good, that's the right answer, because you're going to hear it anyway. Here we go, 603 words a minute. Now, this is not the world record, what I'm about to play. This is this lady on a chat show, and they've set it up. She's going to talk to a restaurant to make an order over the phone to this restaurant. And they've kept this restaurant, obviously, on the line for ages waiting. They've no idea what's going to happen to them. And then she's going to speak this order at 603 words a minute. Your challenge is to figure out, from what she's saying, what kind of restaurant is it? Okay? See if you can get it. Here we go. Now hold on to your seats. They hung up. What was that? Anybody get anything out of it at all, in particular the restaurant type? No, that's what I was expecting. Let me do it again. Let me suggest that it's a Chinese restaurant. Right. Okay, thank you. Hold on to that word and tell me how many there are. Right. How many people now heard the word chicken? Probably spoken about 20 times. Sweet and sour pork was in there. So once you get an idea, you can decode it, but it's incredibly fast. Luckily, we don't all speak at that rate, but we can, or some people can. Okay. It's very fast, and the other thing I've already said, it's intuitive. And this is something that I actually saw in a marketing once, which is you've been learning since birth the only skill you need to operate our technology, to operate our equipment. Okay. So, lots of markets, lots of applications, basically anywhere where those advantages would give benefits. You can imagine using the voice in transport systems, in the office, in the military, of course, in medicine, dictating radiography reports is a very popular application. And we can summarize them into sort of various formal categories, right? So there's sort of command and control, so like doing something with your voice, making something happen. Communicating, getting information, providing intelligence or deriving intelligence from the voice, figuring out what people are talking about, just processing the voice in some interesting way, or simply storing it and bringing it back later. All of this requires some speech processing algorithms. Okay? So, we can categorize applications along two dimensions. So this is where hopefully you've got a sight of a little bit of paper because we're going to be referring to that in a second. There's probably not enough for one each, so you might want to share between two and keep passing them around. It's not absolutely critical. We can distinguish between applications of speech processing which are interactive, real-time kind of interaction like a conversation, or maybe just a technology which sits on a communication link listening to what's going on, monitoring, versus things which are non-interactive. Okay? We can also distinguish between applications of speech processing which are real-time versus those which are not real-time. So real-time means that the processing is happening at the speed at which the events are happening. Non-real-time means that, usually it means that the processing is taking a lot longer than it takes to actually maybe utter the phrase. So, for example, transcribing what I'm saying now and giving you subtitles would require real-time transcription, whereas if this data which is being recorded was then put through a speech recognizer in slow time and delivered a transcript afterwards, that would be in non-real-time. And that might be a more accurate result, because doing things in fast in real time typically means you have to cut a few corners. and therefore the accuracy might be not quite so good. So the telephone is a real-time communication device, but voicemail is essentially a telephone conversation, but it's not in real time. The information is stored and picked up later. Okay, so we've got a real-time, non-real-time, interactive, non-interactive axis here, and we can label those quadrants, A, B, C, D, and the various examples I've given there that shows you where they end up on that diagram. There's a third axis I'm introducing as well, which is we can put, for any application we can put a dot, right? And if they're kind of easy, something we can solve quite easily, then we can put that nearer the center, and if it's really rather challenging, we can put it out around the edge. So this is just a way of thinking about the whole raft of different possibilities here within a simple categorization system. So, do you remember those different categories? So command and communications tends to be all up there on the real-time interactive side. That's typically, if you're commanding something to happen, you know, you want it to happen straight away. You don't typically give a voice command and then expect it to happen much, much later. The intelligence applications, which might be monitoring communications to see if somebody's saying something they shouldn't, that could be done in real time, or live, or it could be done after the event in a kind of data mining sense. Okay? Just treating speech as information applies to pretty much all those three quadrants. Processing and storage applications tend to be interactive, but they could be mostly non-real-time, but they could also be real-time. Okay, so this is what we're going to do with these bit sheets of paper. What I just want you to do is to write on it, and have a chat with your neighbours, doesn't matter, just write on it an application of speech processing which you're quite interested in or can think of, and put a dot somewhere in here as to whether it's real-time, interactive, easy or hard. Okay, so here's an example. So being able to search these voice recordings that I made during the lectures, I would say is quite hard, but it's non-interactive and it's not real-time. So that's all you've got to do. So if you could just spend a minute, have a think, jot something down on the paper, put an X where you think it fits, while you're thinking about the categorization. Okay? Any spare sheets? Oh, no. Oh, okay. Is it spare one? Spare sheet, if you want. You don't have it. Well, just share, or it's not critical that you have one each. But maybe share. Just make it in your own notes. It doesn't really matter. There aren't enough. So just make your own notes. That's fine.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to press on because we don't have a lot of time. So I'd like to pick those up at the end of this lecture. And maybe next week I'll highlight one or two really good ideas. Hopefully somebody here has had a really good idea. Okay, so let's move on. Let's look at a few applications, a few examples of applications now. So basically the style of what's coming up is we've got the little categorization scheme on the bottom left-hand corner. So I'm showing you where this application fits, and I'm going to try and sort of give examples all around the four quadrants. So Amazon Echo is, of course...
Introducing Echo Plus.
Oops, sorry.
It's everything you love about Echo, now with a built-in smart home hub.
Introducing Echo
okay,
Plus.
Okay, let it go.
It's everything you love
stop it.
Now with a built-in smart home hub. Echo Plus connects to Alexa to play music, make calls, control smart home devices, and more. And because Alexa is in the cloud, she's always getting smarter and adding new features. Echo Plus has room-filling speakers powered by Dolby and 7 microphones that can hear you from any direction, even when music is playing. And now, with its built-in smart home hub, Echo Plus lets you quickly set up and control your smart home. No need for a separate hub or app. Just say, Alexa, discover my devices.
Starting discovery.
And Echo Plus will instantly...
Right. So that sort of ran away with me there. What I was wanting to point out is at the bottom I've got kind of buzzwords. So that was speaker independent.
Oh dear.
Backwards. Speaker independent automatic speech recognition. Right. So that what those buzzwords means, you know what automatic speech recognition is, but speaker independent means it works for anybody. So you think of that, that's quite challenging because all our voices here are very different. And so the kind of technology that's optimized that works for many people might be quite different for the technology which is optimized to work for you as an individual, tailored to you and your voice. You can imagine you can get much more accuracy if it's tailored to one voice rather than to many voices. Okay, so next one. Robust, speaker independent, small vocabulary, automatic speech recognition. So still speech recognition. Robust means this is in a horrible, noisy environment. And as you can see, it's going to be in a helicopter. And because it's a noisy environment, that makes it very difficult. So we can't recognize, you know, hundreds of thousands of words. We can only recognize a few command words because that is easier in that very, very difficult environment. So this is just an example of that. It's self-explanatory.
Incorporating military technology developed for the Eurofighter, this system allows the observer to operate the whole bank of equipment using just his voice. He can select which radio, even which channel to use. He can switch the camera pod between video and thermal imaging and lock on to the action. He can call up any location on a video map and zoom into it. All of that can be operated by just the observer and the pilot, freeing up vital resources on the ground. And together, they just don't give the criminal much of a chance.
So, the point there is that he was quite rightly focusing on the benefits rather than on all the sci-fi craziness. He's focusing on the fact that this is a hands-busy, eyes-busy, noisy environment, and by using his voice is a much more efficient interface. But what he could do with his voice, very, very limited. Okay? But tailored to that precise application. Now, there are some other things that you can do, which is that you can line up, take a piece of speech and relate it to another piece of speech and basically figure out where the same words are being spoken. And that can be very useful in applications like helping people learn to read or teaching people a new language. So this is an example of the former. So we've got a kid here who's got an automatic system and it's helping them read. And what you'll see on the screen is there's a cartoon figure, some words, and as they speak... As they read the words, you'll see that when they get the word right, it's highlighted, and so they get very positive feedback that they're reading correctly.
One day, Tina locked the trumpet in its case.
Okay, so you get the idea. So that's what we call forced alignment. It's aligning the speech with the information that's in the screen about what should be being said. So it's not recognizing what he's saying, it's lining it up with what he should be saying. The classic application is back in the sort of from the late 90s and through the early 2000s was dictation. People creating documents by voice. So rather than typing, people who just didn't want to learn how to type would just dictate documents. I usually demo this, but I'm not going to do it today because for some reason the app doesn't work today. But you probably all got this on your, this kind of thing on your phone, right? So Dragon was the market leader. So this is large vocabulary, continuous speech recognition. The magic words here are large vocabulary, unlike the helicopter, where it's maybe just 10 words. Large vocabulary here might be 100,000 different words, 300,000 different words, huge vocabularies. And continuous speech recognition, the word continuous is there because not so many years ago, you had to speak to a speech recognizer, leaving a pause between every word, which is incredibly difficult to do and is certainly not natural. So there was a breakthrough in the 90s where we figured out how to recognize speech which is continuous, right? Where all the words are basically run together into one continuous utterance. But what I can do, as I guess you're all familiar with Siri, you probably all use Siri. So Siri is interesting because that came out in 2011 and that basically changed everything. So we moved away from dictation to systems which could not only recognize what you say, figure out what you meant, and speak back. So it's a dialogue system, but what was brilliant with Siri is that it was on the phone, which meant that it was had access to everything else that's on the phone, including where you are. Which meant the integration and the localization that you get from that meant that it could perform quite intelligent functions, which I will now attempt to demonstrate live. Hey, Siri.
I didn't quite get that.
Great. If the PhD students are here, you should be really happy with that, right? Because you know there's research to be done. Okay. Where am I?
You're on Portobello Lane, Sheffield, England.
What's happening right now?
Here's some news.
Okay, so you get the idea. But there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes there, and most of what you're seeing happening is not happening on the phone. Speech recognition is not happening on the phone. That's probably gone off to the US, and then the results have come back. But it's integrated with information that is on the phone. So that's Siri. Siri broke the mold, 2011. And that was followed by a whole bunch of interesting things. So this one I ought to be able to demo. So this is a real-time speech, not real-time, it's slow-time, speech-to-speech translation. So we've got speech recognition, which is turning what I'm going to say into text. The text is translated from one language to the other, and then that text in the other language is converted back into speech. So the idea is that as a tourist, you might use this to communicate with someone whose language you don't speak. In fact, the technology behind this, we here at Sheffield worked on for the London Olympics, and there was a people could use it in London. So here we go. So it's called VoiceTra, and I've got it set up from English to Mandarin. I imagine we've got quite a few Mandarin speakers in the room. So, hello, can you help me? I'm in trouble. Where is the nearest hospital?
您好,这里是最近的医院,我很困扰。
Right, no. Was that correct?
Yeah.
Good, thank you. In fact, I could tell it was correct because it gives me the Mandarin is translated back into English so on the text, so I can see what the translation is, which is correct. So, now, that's fairly impressive, but what you just saw happened in Japan, right? So the cloud and the connectivity as well has had a huge impact on this kind of technology. Okay. So I mentioned maybe you could transcribe my lectures in real time. Well, people are working on things like this. So this is a clip from AT&T Labs. Real time, large vocabulary, continuous speech recognition. So doing a huge vocabulary, but doing it in real time. What you're going to see, she's speaking, you'll see the live captioning. So this is, of course, done on many TV programs now. But if you look at the captioning, see what happens when she ums and ahs and stuff like that. Because what comes out of people's mouths is not necessarily fully formed sentences.
The internet, the open scientific literature and other sources, and the opportunity for access to dangerous pathogens can be fairly routine. Government labs, academic labs, industry labs, Many of these organisms exist in nature. And it is also the case that you...
Okay, so hopefully you spotted breath was transcribed. When you breathe, there's a noise. So rather than ignore that, you have to do something about it. You can't misrecognize, you might misrecognize it as a word, but you have to have algorithms which know everything that's going on here, not just the interesting bits. Okay, I'm not going to dwell on this, but one of the other things that people are interested in is can you determine somebody's emotional state from their voice? You know, when people get angry, it affects their voice, or they're happy, laughing slightly. So there's a whole area of called voice stress analysis or voice emotion analysis. I think I mentioned this again towards the end of the course, so we'll come back to that. And then there's a whole bunch of things which will be relevant to your assignment, which is manipulating the voice. And we see this all the time in TV and films and cartoons, things like this.
By your last trip, did you discover what the earth people eat?
How was that done? Well, you're going to be learning about that. These are applying speech processing algorithms to take a voice and, you might say, distort it or modify it or change it in some way. And for all the British people here... I may not do that, but you can create a PD program to give you a Dalek voice in 15 seconds. That's the power of the language PD. So you might want to have a go at that. Okay, another possible thing one could do. I mentioned alignment. The kid who was reading, right? We were aligning what he was speaking with what he should be saying. There's a music studio has taken that one step further and used it to modify the timing of singing. So when people sing, maybe in duet, sometimes they record independently and their voices don't quite line up in time. But you can use speech processing to correct that. So what I'm about to play, you're going to hear two people singing, but you'll also notice that their voices aren't quite timed correctly.
Here in the temptation is so bad.
Not bad, not bad. But with some speech processing, we can actually tighten that up and line them up so that they are timed perfectly together.
Here in the garden, where temptation is so bad.
Beautiful, right? So that's just using the sort of techniques you'll be learning about over the next few weeks. Okay, so we're going to finish this lecture on this massive diagram. Have a look at this in the notes afterwards. So basically, it's the same axes that we've been talking about, but now populated with a lot of different things. We've got applications in red and technologies in black. We've got the four different quadrants. So, okay, so we've got speech store and forward is the non-real time interactive side, speech data mining, so where you might have a massive resource of recordings and you're trying to find somebody saying something in particular, for news you might be interested in that sort of application, that's all here. Top left is more real time but non-interactive, so that's like monitoring or surveillance, listening into conversations to see if people are saying things they shouldn't. And then over here is what I like to call Star Trek, which is all the interactive, real-time stuff. Okay, we just about made it. So this is what we've done today. We've talked about what speech processing is, what it's for, went through all the bunch of technologies and applications. And that's it for now. I'm going to stop for 5 minutes, and then at 5 o'clock we will restart. And we'll be looking at what sound is. Okay, thanks.